hands anymore. They moved the cloth and took it away without her noticing them. She had found a measuring to her work, regular as a pulse, but faster. After a while, it was possible to go for a long time without stopping the machine at all. One hand reached for the new cutout while the other guided the last seams in the cap, just finishing under the machine. Now thread came and was fixed with one hand, slowing but not stopping the work, and she learned to wind large bobbins tight and full to get more time out of each one. One Saturday, she opened her pay envelope and was surprised to find a dollar more in it. It made her frightened. Who was looking for that money to call her a thief? In the end, she had to go to the floor foreman, and he told her the money was moans, or maybe pones or bones. The fear grew. She pushed a paper and pencil to the man until he wrote it out. Bonus. More pay. You go over top quota, you get a bonus.
Safe money? Good money?
Yes. She took the envelope and walked away fast out of the factory and toward home in the freezing, almost dark. The walk was another of the cold savings for Abel's debt. It meant she had to use all evening in bed trying to get warm, unless there was wash to get out and water to be heated in the basement before midnight. The walking tonight was different, lighter. Halfway home, she stopped and stood on the corner thinking. Now there was money for the streetcar. She decided against it. Abel would be happy with this money. It could mean dinner out, the laundry done, better shoes. They hadn't bought any shoes when they were rich. Then it opened in her mind that if the law found out about the money, they could take it away from her and throw it into the lost place of Abel's debt. She was Abel's wife. Already they had made him come to her and take the green jewel ring away. She stopped again in the middle of walking, and everything began to sway between fear and anger. Why the law hurt them was the law's secret. Then she must have a secret, too. She made up her mind and moved into a doorway to take the extra money out of her pay envelope and put it in her pocket. It would be hers, not for the law. If Abel knew, he would only take it for himself and then law would get it. She must find a way to use it without his knowing. Until then, it would have to be hidden. She went the rest of the way home slowly, thinking. Bonus is good. Only Abel is there to make it bad. The landlady had told them in the beginning they were not allowed to cook in the room. When they crept in with a small gas ring, she was busy and didn't see them. They kept the gas ring hidden when they weren't using it, but there were cooking smells from the soup or beans or canned stew, and they were sure she knew. But she did not speak, and they did not speak. In their new poorness, there was very little coal, and hot food let them go to bed in the icy room, holding a small warmth inside them. They wiped the dishes with newspapers after eating and hurried to bed to keep the warmth. Then they slept or made love and then slept. It was too cold to sew or mend. She saved the work most needed for Sunday. Once a week, she went to the basement and washed clothes. It was dark early in the days of the winter. They did not want to burn lights in order to talk about their days. It was talk already old to them, so they went to bed and lay awake in the dark and did not try to spell words into each other's hands. That was a thing of before, a loving thing, when they were just married. When there had been money for lights, when the whole world was golden with light, they had lain after loving and spelled words into each other's palms. Sometimes Janice wondered why she didn't tell Abel about the deaf girls at work. It must be because of the cold and because of the dark. Once or twice she almost stumbled, but the words stopped at the secret and left only the danger of open space between herself and Abel. Now, with a new secret, the bonus money, she was glad she had not told him. She had to think of a place to hide the money. All during supper, she kept looking with her mind. It had to be a place where Abel and the landlady did not look. She knew the landlady came into their rooms when they were gone. It had never worried her before. She had simply put the cooking things away in the closet so it was possible not to see them. Now there was this money to worry about. She waited until Abel left to go downstairs and out to the privy. Then she went to the closet and got down her suitcase. It was heavy cardboard, painted to look like leather, but it had metal corners and there were strips of wood inside to make it strong. The deaf girls at school had given it to her as a wedding present. It was her only wedding present. She remembered how she had packed her other dress and underwear in it, getting ready to go with her husband into outside. Her life was very special then, and the suitcase was important. It was a way of telling an idea. The suitcase was the idea of going someplace, of outside. It was the deaf girl speaking to her without words or sign. She had kept the suitcase very carefully. As she looked at it now, she noticed a new chip of paint off in the front. Inside, there were two cloth pockets, one on each side. She put the money into the left side pocket and folded it down shut. Then she closed the suitcase and put it away and hurried back to bed. The secret made her feel safe and good and ashamed only when she thought about not telling Abel. It wasn't lying, really. It was because they didn't have time to talk. It was because of the dark. There was an extra dollar in the pay envelope the next week, and the next. Janice had never had any money of her own to spend or keep. She was surprised at how it made her notice different things. For instance, how much Abel was in their room. He was there all the time. She had no chance to hide the money except when he went to the privy. She started work before he did and finished later, and all the rest of the time he was there watching her, in the bed or eating or waiting for dinner or looking out the window. If she didn't tell him about the money, there would have to be excuses and lies for the things she planned to bring home. Maybe she would buy a new skirt or warm overshoes. They would have to be hidden in some package and put away. She would never get them home before he saw them. He knew all of her clothes, everything she used. And he had said she could never get back the green jewel ring. She would have to get it without his knowing. It was the only thing for which she still had daydreams. They had taken it away, the court and Abel. Poorness had taken the ring away, but it was still hers. She remembered wearing it in the summer. She remembered it more clearly than what she had eaten last night. It was unfair. Unfair. Before the ring, maybe there should be overshoes. Walking to work in rain or snow made her feet wet and cold all day, and then it was worse at night to come home because the wet shoes froze. Overshoes. She tried every way to get out alone when the stores were open, but something always happened. Sometimes Abel wanted to go too, or he said it was too cold to walk, or he waited for her and sulked until she went with him. Several times the landlady came in to say something or to ask them for the rent, and after these times Abel would be too angry or afraid to do what she planned for him to keep him in. She thought of telling him there was extra work one night or two at the factory, but it was too big a lie. The weeks went on. The pocket at the side of the suitcase was pushing out wide, and then it was the beginning of spring, and Abel was kept late on a job for 3 days. In that time, without her knowing how, want and want had passed. Suddenly, the terrible need was gone, and the bonus money stayed in the suitcase. She decided to keep saving for the green ring. She did not let herself worry about telling Abel when she got it home. Abel was proud of Janice. She complained, she sulked, she was cold, looking colder to make him feel ashamed. But he had thought in the beginning, after his trouble in the court, that she would leave him. Did she know how long the debt was going to be? This winter was going to be one of 20 winters of the debt. It was a winter of little more than one meal a day, half heat and no change of the endless same-sameness of work and sleep. He had made the $6,000 smaller by $3.25. But Janice did not leave. Her light was gone, her laughter and joking, her pride in him, her feminine ways, the softness of her face in the green leaf sunlight. That part was gone, but still she did not go. It made him feel thankful and surprised each day when she came in from the dark and nodded to him and turned to the closet to hang up her things. It was spring now. The shadows of the afternoon were not dangerous with ice, and there were smells in the air that made him remember springs on the farm. Always before, when he thought of the farm, it was to remember the frightened hurry, the sweat face, dry mouth hurry of work from dark to dark. Now he saw again pictures of the times that were warm and yellow with the sun. Some of the pictures were distant, moving like smoke in the no-word shadow time of his childhood. Some were of the spring, only a year ago when he came to the farm with Janice. He had words then, and a new self thinking in the words. Janice was so beautiful with all her hope. They took walks together in the hills, going up to the pine places. They played in the fields, spelling flower names that his mother had written for them. Once they lay down in the flowers to make love, and the rain began. He said he would drive the tame animals home, and she started running away. Her hand was spelling bird and animal names behind her. He ran to catch her. She said she would not be called tame animal, and he watched her making the sign animal on her chest. Her saying it made him think again of loving because of the way she made the sign, and she knew this too. All moving was the same, was sign then. Kissing was sign, like talk, but more, and making love was sign. He could close his eyes and she would spell love words on his body. He remembered pictures of distant winters and of those single afternoons when winter changed. It would happen after a long time of cold and rain and feeling hopeless. On one afternoon, birds would come. Suddenly, there would be a fat bird in winter feathers, not coming to look and eat and fly back to its warm nest. This bird would sit riding the branches, its face not down on its feathers. The horse of winter pasture would still be humble in his thick coat, but suddenly the wind that moved the hair of his tail and forehead could do nothing more than that. It could not make the horse lower its head. A week later, petals would come in the orchard and a green breathing on the big trees near the house, and a waste of pollen on all the paths. As Abel tried to make the pictures more clear and more clear in words, there was a filling in his mind. He felt his mind growing big with all his past. He saw the pasture pond. He thought about it, to make it words so he could keep it to see again. And he remembered how thin the water looked and how the mud lay bare around it. Nothing grew near the pond. The sides of it saved the prints of the cows. In spring, his mother opened the windows with a quickness so happy it looked like anger. The wind came into the damp mold smell house all day, and for everyone who went outside, if for anything, any reason, there would be on his neck and shoulders and against his hair the happy, good, golden, generous gift of the warm sun. And sun would be coming here where he and Janice were waiting as poor as other winters of the farm. Soon they would be able to walk home to dinner easily in the late light. Maybe he would go over to the mill and call for her and they could come home together like some couples he saw, arm in arm. He felt good about his work. He was on a big offset press, making handbills and printing the racing sheets for two horse tracks out of town. Lately they were doing more work on a smaller new press. Wages were up, and if the court money was still eaten and eaten away by the court mouth, it was spring, and he couldn't stop hoping. He didn't want to tell this hope to Janice. It could make her begin to want things again and be impatient. She was always asking, "How much now? What money are they taking now?" As if the money were in her hand and a man came and pulled it away from her. Sometimes he wanted to make her understand interest, and show her all the poor years so she would stop saying, "What after that?" When he tried to talk to her about it, he got too frightened and had to stop. She hadn't left him this winter. But this winter was only one. "I remembered all the farm today," he said. They were eating. Vegetable soup with canned beans poured into it. "I remembered things in springtime." Janice tossed her head. "Your mother doesn't like me." Her look didn't change. They both knew it was true. "That was only in the beginning, because of the signs. She's afraid of signs. When I was small, teachers told her signs were bad and made people look funny." He shrugged. "She doesn't like me because I make her feel all alone." "She is alone. She's the only hearing. My father and brother and you and me. Before she was hearing, and then you and I came with signs, and all of us learned to talk together a little for the first time. It made her be deaf, see, when we all talked together. She wrote to me once. She told me signs were dirty, like being naked." "I think of back home," he said. I think about it a lot now. She was paying attention, watching, her finger feeling the level of the water in the coffee pot as she filled it. Dinner was always late when they started talking. It made her angry that he would want to keep her from dinner by his talking. Talking never did anything.
I remember days and how things looked, he said.
But not about the people.
I never can remember what my mother or my father were thinking or saying or what they wanted or what they were like.
Your mother was against me. She took away the soup bowls and rinsed them for coffee. It was hard to make words, but to remember things, he had to have them. It was the same way that Janice once felt about outside. And here he sat remembering things before the words. He had stopped eating his bread. It was strange to him that the words seemed to make him remember more and feel more now than he had felt then, when the things were happening. He remembered that his mother was sad. He remembered the smell of lateness and the small cold of outside that always came in with him when he came from school.
She was all alone, my mother, he said to Janice.
When I could not learn in hearing school, she stopped being angry, but she got sad. And he remembered a little of an ancient weight. As they waited for the coffee, he said, I think about going to church. There are deaf there. Maybe we can go. We can take out of the food money to go on the streetcar. Maybe we can find some friends there. He was thinking of the school, the deaf school, a cold, bad-smelling place where he had found his life and his wife and schoolmates and words. She shook her head. We're too poor. Nobody likes poor people. And in church, you have to pay. They pass around a basket on a long stick, and you have to pay.
I think only hearing pay. I remember that.
But in school chapel every Sunday, we never paid.
That was different. You have to pay in church.
I don't want to go. The others are rich, and they won't want to be friends to us there. I remember what that Comstock said to you in the court about how deaf here hate poor people. I want to stay home.
Oh, he was ashamed. Maybe his parents were no good.
Abel remembered the Comstock face, scornful in the court, and the hate flying from his fingers.
Only his hands were deaf. The rest of him was hearing.
The ugly part was hearing, she said, and they laughed. When coffee was ready, they drank it and rinsed the bowls. The night had silenced their hands. They did not talk about the church again. Janice had begun to leave for work early to have a few minutes to laugh and talk with Mary and Barbara before the machines began. When she got to her place that day, Mary was waiting for her, but there was no greeting or gossiping, and the sign was hard. You get more money. We know you get bonus money every week. She walked away before Janice had time to answer, and then the bell rang. At lunch break, Janice went to where they always sat, but the other girls had already moved farther down and she had to walk the extra way, to mean that she was sorry and wanted to be forgiven. They didn't say anything, but they talked quickly to each other while she sat and ate, her back to the hearing workroom to protect them. The silence was painful to bear all day, and she came home tired and near tears and could not tell Abel why it was. In school, she had often done such things to other girls on no more than a whim, and they to her. It was easier in the school where there was always another group to join, new friends, different enemies, wars and truces on a whim. Now a game was everyone. A war, the world. The next day things were the same, and the next after that, and she did not sleep at night. Then the girls got bored with their anger and let her come slowly to the edge of their patience. Afterwards, she was slowly forgiven because they needed her, and after a week they asked her to show them how she worked. My hands aren't fast, she told them, but they didn't want to believe her. She showed them how to use the rhythm of the machine to slow but not stop it while work was opened into it and closed away, changing hands. They raised their eyebrows and made unbelieving faces, but she saw their minds moving toward the ways she had shown them, and the idea of the bonus. When the bell rang, they were eager to get back to their machines. The afternoon passed in its own slowing rhythm, and the tiredness of the women thickened the air and pulled back the minutes on the clock. Afternoon air was always bad in the shop. Mary said it was from the lunch boxes of the immigrant girls. Barbara said it was everyone sweating with the windows closed, and they all laughed when Mary said, "That's why the boss walks through in the morning." Sometimes in summer, girls fainted during the afternoon because of the heat and the smell. Janice never told Abel how close she came to being sick with it sometimes. When she complained, he didn't do anything but shrug his shoulders. Anyway, there was a rumor that it was worse in the mill than in the power sewing rooms. The next day at lunch, Barbara said she had a plan for the three of them. She and Mary had tried Janice's way of working, and it speeded the caps through the machine like a miracle. Why not get the quota up, all three of them together, and then go and ask to go into the B section where the work pants and shirts were made? There, they told Janice, a girl worked on a different rate, faster, for more money. Using the new way, Barbara said, they would be able to do better, since the machines were lighter and faster than the ones they had now for the many thicknesses of the caps. Mary didn't seem as sure as Barbara that a change would help them. Janice said nothing, but decided to herself that she would not go with them. Maybe the new place wouldn't give bonus money, and besides, the speed was hers, not theirs. The two of them had taken her speed for their own as their own idea and even made big plans on it, when it was hers and not theirs at all. She felt almost too angry to speak to them, and her face was hard when the bell rang and they all went back to their machines. At about 4, Janice was working against the heaviness of the air and small flickers of a kind of cramping pain she was beginning to get in her shoulders every day. She felt a hand poking at her back. Sometimes the floor foreman stopped a girl. She took her foot off the pedal at the end of a cap and turned to see. It was Mary. And at the other machines, the girls were not working and some were standing up, looking toward the other side of the room. They were looking very hard, as if it were more than an interesting thing, as if it were something they needed to see and they would not look away even if someone told them to, or the bell rang. Some of the girls were biting their lips. They were beginning to turn all the way around, watching the main doors. Mary shook a quick B out of her hand. "Barbara." And Janice stood up and turned too. She got a look of disgust from the girl at the next machine, and she thought it was the first time that girl had seen her at all. There was someone going out, and others were making a big crowd around that spot so the person was not seen. Suddenly, the people in the crowd looked as if they were all falling, and two of them moved away. Janice saw that the person in the middle was Barbara. People were going with her, walking and also carrying, and before they got her out through the door that the floor foreman was holding open, Janice caught a glimpse of part of the dragging dress that was covered with blood. "What?" She said it quickly, too frightened to hide the sign. "She was going too fast," Mary said. "The machine got her hand." Janice turned away, feeling sick. She tried to say in her mind that Barbara was only stupid and didn't look at what she was doing, but there was her own knowing. Every day, some part of looking or thinking went away, stopped and slept and did not follow the cloth or the thread or the rhythm. In front of her stood the same machine, blind and hungry, its silver tooth waiting for the joyful rush downward and the bite of more and more, for 100,000 yards of cloth. Every day it ate and pushed across the ticking stripes, moving, and if the hand that fed it slipped or was too slow with tiredness, it did not know flesh from cloth. It was just as glad to turn down upon that hand and pull the fingers in and eat them also. Janice wanted to run away. She looked across the floor. Most of the other girls were back at their machines again, and the wheels began to turn as they started up one after another. The floor foreman took three of the girls and they went to get mops and pails, and then came back and cleaned up the splattered blood that was on Barbara's machine and trailed out to the aisle and down and out the door. Later, he looked over Janice, who was still standing, staring at the door, trembling. He motioned her back to work. Even Mary was at her seat and working again. Janice sat down and began adjusting the stiff cloth under the greedy needle. She knew the other girls were thinking about the blood and the pain and the sick shock of being hurt, maybe about being crippled and made ugly in their hands. To them, hands were only what did ordinary work. In her mind was a picture of hands. "It is one of us getting hurt in the hands. One of us. To be without hands. It means to be dumb. It means never to talk again, like to be dead. One of us. Without hands." 4.
Summer came, and Abel received his increase as a third-year apprentice. When the money came, Mr. Webendorf made him sit down, and they figured that the debt was now $5,577.28. If things went all right this year, the debt would be $5,528. The boss had spent a long time telling Abel about interest, and now the interest seemed more important to him than the first money, and he was careful to keep the interest money added dollar by dollar in his mind. Mr. Webendorf wrote a note to him then, and told him that there were things the court did not know. Wages had gone up in the printing trade, and Abel, as a third-year apprentice, would be getting not only his $8 a week, but maybe extra money called Christmas bonus. Mr. Webendorf told him to save this money and not tell the court. It was not going in his regular pay, and what the court didn't know about, it could not claim. Abel had first thought to tell Janice to make her happy with the thought of a dinner out or shoes or a dress. But he was afraid. If the court found out, they would send him to jail. If Janice bought things with that money, maybe the store people would tell the court. He could only go on working his day waiting. He tried to keep his thoughts away from the money. That summer seemed good to Abel, a relief from the cold and the coal money. Janice complained of the heat as much as she did of the cold, but Abel liked the long evenings, the golden light that saw him home, the breeze lifting the heavy maple leaves. He remembered the old ladies fanning themselves in the church at home. He did not know what made him think of this. He liked the smell of sun burning the spring sap hard in new wood, and the smell of the ground rich with the green leaves that fell and rotted there. After work on Saturday and all day Sunday, they were able to go walking along the green leaf streets of those nice sections of town. Large houses were there, sitting like comfortable old women, their cool lawns gathered around them. All day they walked and pretended arm in arm, silent and wise, and there was a new pleasure because of the map. There had been an order one day for a printing of 5,000 city maps to sell at the fairgrounds when the state fair opened. Abel seldom looked at anything he printed except to check for errors in placement or the strength of the inking. But something about the maps interested him. So instead of throwing away the strike-offs to litter the floor, he brought them home. In the last light, he and Janice looked at them. They found their own street, and it made Abel feel famous almost, that anyone could look and find where he lived. They found the mill, the printing plant, and even the street of wonderful stores where the ring was and the lion with its unclosing eye. They found the court building, too. And then they began to see how much larger than these streets the city was. "It doesn't matter," she said. "We are too poor."
"You are afraid of friends."
"I am not. I don't like people know we are poor."
"It makes me feel like a man in jail."
"You made me in jail, too."
"I know," he said.
"But see, it doesn't have to be a small jail. It's bigger than we thought. Just work and nothing else. At least in summer, it can be a big and pretty jail." "A jail and poor. We are still poor." He didn't answer her, but took the map and with his pencil divided it into quarters. "This summer, we will walk in this part," he told her. "Only in this part." They put the map on the wall, and he had a feeling of pleasure and success. This surprised him because of the new freedom. A year ago, he knew he could not have been so humble or so patient, putting his pleasure into parts to make it longer, and measuring so closely the movements of their day's freedom. Each Sunday after that, rain or sunshine, they investigated their section of the summer. To the south, they found only mills and factories. To the west, the avenue of wonderful stores and busy streets in the newer part of the city. But north and spreading eastward, the workmen's streets, smelling of cabbage and back houses, led on into a neighborhood of peaceful tree-lined streets. The houses were solid and dignified, with large, deep porches and careful white-dressed children sitting on slow porch swings, back and forth in the slow noon. No matter which part of the section they saw on their Sundays, they always came back to these streets and dressed in the still bright clothes of last summer. They strolled up one side and down the other,
nodding to the nursemaids, and pretending that in just a few more steps they would turn in at their own house and go up on the wide porch where the rocking chairs were waiting and the cool drinks were set out. They walked silently, their arms linked, but their minds were storing the daydream, changing, improving it, choosing or rejecting parts of other houses on other blocks. Back in their close, hot room before supper, they found themselves arguing, sometimes bitterly, over the new wishes or the old. Janice wanted a cat. Abel didn't. Janice wanted a nursemaid for the children, a uniformed, starched nurse. Abel didn't. Abel wanted two cars. Janice didn't. Sometimes these arguments took over their fingers and began of themselves to knit the strands of the car and the court and the debt into these summer dreams. Then their eyes would narrow against each other, and then they would pull away their hands, weak with fear, and they wouldn't argue again that day. At the end of the summer, they took down the map and put it away carefully. They planned to leave the far sections for summers when there was money for car fare and small lunches. The section of the deaf church was the last one on the map. Both of them noticed where it was. Neither mentioned it. On Thanksgiving, Mary at the mill gave Janice a pound of chestnuts. She took them home, trying not to seem too pleased, and said, "A girl at the mill," and nothing more. Abel was proud and impressed. She must have hearing friends there. How wonderful she was still, even though the cold and poverty had faded her and though she seldom smiled. How wonderful the magic that could go so easily into that other world, gliding by its tricks and confusion, able to be given gifts. At Christmas, they had a letter from Abel's parents at the farm. "My dear son and daughter-in-law, I am taking pen in hand to write to you and tell you we are sorry not to send the things we had been hoping. Things is awful bad here this year all over the valley and in town, too. The prices has fallen so bad there are people who didn't get nothing this year to get seed. And the ones that had hybrid crops in are just that worse out of luck. People blame the tractors, but I think it was mostly speculators that done it. Ekers has lost their farm. Yost's, too. They are going out west. Mertens have lost their farm and hire theirselves out to anyone who can pay them keep, and the whole family is broke up. These are not railroad siding people or shiftless people, but neighbors whose folks had land here since anyone can remember. And it makes us sad to see such terrible things happen to them. Mr. Pierce down at the store says it isn't only the valley, but the whole state, and maybe even the whole country, which he means farms. The prices have dropped to nothing. Your father and I don't mean to make you feel bad by this news and where you are in the city. You don't get hurt by this none. We had an idea to send you some money and things at Christmas, and with things like they are, we will not be able to. We are both glad you got a trade and can make your way in the city and are not caught here like so many of the other boys. We miss you, your father and I both. We are glad you are not having any hard times. Best wishes for Christmas, and we hope you have a good and easy winter. Sincerely, your mother, Sarah Wyndham Ryder." They read the letter twice, and then Janice shrugged and got up. "Why write and say you can't do something?" Abel put down the letter, shaking his head. "I remember," he said, "something my father does in spring. We all go with him, and he walks to the end where he owns. He walks around the whole farm and every field to the edge. He goes by the creek to see where it changes its places and to the woods." In his mind, he saw his father stopping to look at a fence post eaten by some bugs. The picture he had was from the years before the school and the words, long before he had Janice and words and brought them both back with him. Abel's father was a deaf, too, a man without words. He had no sign. He could not show what he meant except by writing little notes sometimes. Only Abel's mother could understand his father's speaking. If anyone else understood him, even Abel, it was because of the straightness of his thinking. He could point to something or move his hand to show an action, and by that or by the reason and the need, people could sometimes see what he meant. Everyone, all the neighbors, were always surprised at how much Matthew noticed on the land. Now, the letter said, things were bad. The letter worried Abel. It made him feel afraid. The next day, he went out during his lunch period and bought a Christmas card with a picture of a table full of good food and a big fire, and on the back of it he wrote his name and Janice's also. He did not write about the auto or the court, but only good wishes and his name, as he was taught to do at the school. Then he went to the post office to buy the stamp, feeling proud at having it to do. People were lined up to the window with letters and packages, stamping the cold out of their feet and moving as if to complain with their bodies at the line and the waiting. Abel stamped also and shook his head and shrugged every once in a while, so as to look impatient as Hearing did. In the evening, he worked his talk around to say, "I had a long wait today. It was at the post office. I waited a long time because of the importance. I sent best wishes in the mail." Janice's eyebrows went up and her mouth pulled up in the middle, because she didn't want to commit herself by asking questions about it. "It was to my parents," he said. She moved her mouth again in the way she did when she was first married, when all her movements were faster and freer. It reminded him with pain of the summertime people they had been and were not anymore. "My parents must have an answer. They had the idea to send me to school to have a trade." She was lying on the bed looking at him. "Did I ever tell you about my school before deaf school?" he asked.
"No,"
she said, and picked at a hangnail. She put the side of the nail in her mouth to pull at it. "Many things happened in those days," he said. "I had no words in those days." That day, he was early to help his father get water. He worked the pump. Much swinging. He tried to put his words into that single day, into a place where they had never been. He spoke of it until he was almost there himself, swinging on the pump handle until it came down, then pushing it up, trembling because of the cold of the metal. Down and up, until a cough began that he felt against his body through the handle. Then the water came. All around, the day was blue and bright cold. It was a day for woodlot. Soon, he thought, his father would point to the saw and axe and hatchet, and then they would go up on the hill into the woods and cut the fallen trees for wood for the fire. There was fast wood and slow wood, big wood, and his work was fast wood, gathering it up, trimming branches, putting it on the sledge. His words made him smell the air, that day. That blue time day was like a wood day. He tried to tell Janice how the smell of sap is, and to show her the grainy and moist crumbs that dropped from the feeding of the saw. He told her about his father coming toward him saying, "Oh," which meant go, and pointing with his head to the house. His mother had taken his clothes and set them out by the stove. She motioned him to get dressed. Church clothes. But it isn't church day. He began to show his mother it was a wood day, sawing back and forth, the tree fall. She laughed, but didn't look happy. She made her mouth into something he did not know, a mouth, "Ooh," then breakfast. Afterwards, she kissed him, making with her hand, "Outside." And there was the wagon and his father sitting up on it, waiting and making, "Ooh," with his mouth. Abel also tried, "Ooh," and they looked at one another until his mother looked away. His mother was a Hearing. He only knew it later. Then he looked down at himself in his nice clothes. "But ooh is not a church day." Not church? They rode away from town, away only gone when they went to visit the molasses-eating people. His mother was always trying to show or tell him something, but he could never find it. His mother's mouth was always trying to make him do and feel, and the things were always mysteries that made him tired and angry. His father did not show with his mouth. Children were on the road. His father stopped the cart and motioned them. "Come up." They did, and again, until there were many. Then Abel had an idea. He was going where they were going. He got frightened. He did not want to keep moving toward that place. They went farther than he ever was, far past the house of the molasses-eating people. They turned in then and stopped at a building with a top made of stone. A woman came out and there were children running and playing all around. Only children. There was a church bell hung on a slaughtering frame thing on the far side. The woman went over and pulled a rope, and the bell feeling went through Abel so that his teeth began to pull themselves inside his head, and his face bones shook weak under his skin. The riding children opened their mouths and fell off the cart, and everywhere they ran and ran into the building. His father leaned down and took up an egg box and showed it to him, opened it so that he could see the food inside and gave it to him. Then his father pushed him toward the edge of the seat and nodded and looked toward the building where all the children were swallowed. He made ooh, and Abel knew that this was ooh. He got down, his face cold and his body feeling stiff and tired. He held the egg box tightly and went to the door. When he was almost there, he turned and looked back. The cart was pulled around and was moving away from him down the road. Inside was large, and so much with things that for a long time he only stared. There was a sour yellow smell of damp, cold, old and bad boy. The bad boy reminded him that he needed to go to the back house. His stomach hurt with that, but the room held him, and only when he felt the first drops beginning did he turn and run. A girl was coming out of it, and he almost ran into her at the door. She said something too fast and ugly-faced him, pointing to another back house all the way over on the other side of the schoolyard. Now the front of his pants were damp and his teeth were clenched with trying to hold. A long time to the other back house and unbutton the big bone buttons that wadded in the double thick of wet cloth. Too late. When he came out of the back house, he knew that he was only to be sad. Very sad for the wood day. There was no one in the schoolyard now. He went back to the big building, opening the door that was closed, as he knew he must. Everyone was sitting at the row of desks that filled the room, and at the front, facing the wrong way, was the desk at which the woman sat against the children. Her mouth was speaking, and there was something, ah. He quickly took off his hat because he thought he understood hat, but the whole room rose, big and small. Backs were to him, blocking him from the woman's mouth. Suddenly they all sat down again. The woman came and took him to one of the desks, pointing into his chest with her finger and then at the seat. His eyes kept her face to make sure. A little nod, a lowering of eye. Yes, he sat. Time, time. Years. The air got filled, got empty. Children were up and down, went and came back, some with books and some with papers. Mouth, important too fast, nothing to follow. So he sat until the things were done for him or until his seatmate, a tiny white-haired girl with no eyebrows, jabbed him in the ribs. Often he swept the room for signal. His row, he learned, was woman's teeth on lip, roll, teeth smile top and bottom. When he saw that lip thing beginning, he swept the room, hoping to see, to anticipate, to know, to do quickly before he should be punished or laughed at. His seatmate showed him that he must copy from the book lines just as they were. A, 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 A. For a while, he was happy at this, doing as the others did. Afterwards, the woman spoke to them, but he caught no meaning, not even one word, as he sometimes could catch meaning with his mother. He wondered if he would ever see his mother again. He remembered her as very wonderful. She seemed so long a time dead, she and his father and the farm. Then the desks yawned suddenly and went down by signals he could not see. Certain children were talking, and some raised their arms up, and then they got up, and then they sat down, and then, without warning, his seatmate flung herself away from him, slamming her book away into her desk as she went, and all of them blew from the room like leaves, spinning from their seats and away out the door. The woman came over then and sat with him and got him to say her name, or something like it. He remembered that look to the mouth between his mother and his father. She looked at a glass machine that was taken from her pocket. Such a glass machine, large, was on the wall. She waved him out to go with the children. He followed the movements of her eyes and the way her head turned a little toward the door. So he got up and went out slowly. He didn't want to go. He was afraid of the children. Girls with a clothes rope,
mouths gaping altogether. His head began to ache with trying to understand. He walked away slowly, moving with great care around the outside of the schoolyard. He didn't want to alert the children to make them notice him. The yard was a nice place. Children's feet had made its dust fine, fine, soft, and smooth as flour. It was warm with sun. If no one was here, he would have made a mound of it, a big warm pile, and then taken off his shoes and walked around in it. There was a swing, too. And beyond that, another big slaughtering frame with the tying ropes hanging down, but the big boys were climbing up on them. Others were running after a boy. They turned and swooped past Abel, the last one pushing him away. Their mouths were busy, busy. How could he follow the mouths of the fast, wild, jumping, turning, over-the-shoulder players, the tar-chewers, the nail-biting, head-bent ones? His head was pounding. If only he could stop them, freeze them in play, hold the jump in midair and face them front to make them form to his mother's round perfection, their casual, wild, fearful, friendly, sudden gone. He felt the bell again with the bones of his face. Everyone stopped then, and they all went in. More hands up, hands down, and getting up and down. Then they all took out lunches, so he did too. The sun square was gone from his desk. The afternoon passed. It went so slowly that by the end of it, he had long forgotten the beginning. The children wrote. The children spoke. He followed and did not follow, too tired and growing impatient at the mouths. They were only quick, passing, not real. The moving of them lost before they made meaning. He copied a picture with no idea. He cut out a star from paper, 8 arms, not 6, but no better. And when the others left and the sun was making its window squares far on the other side of the room, he found himself breathing the dust of it all alone, with the woman who was not a mother and whose name he could not imitate. When he was let go at last from the building, the light was long and golden and sad with its going. He was surprised and confused at the length of the light. Didn't he take all the day's pain with a strong face, never weeping once, never running away? Wasn't that enough without the day being used away besides? In spite of all he could do, his eyes filled. He looked about, trying to find some secret place where he might creep away and cry. There was a cart coming toward the place from down the road. He watched the light catch its metal now and then, and once or twice it was overtaken by its own dust. A terrifying hope began. It came up and beat inside his body. His father, dead these long light-passing times, was coming back. His father-mother farm life was coming back to take him away, to take him home, to forgive him. He began to run in circles, unable to contain his joy and his gratitude. Then he stood humbly as a person does at any miracle. Never had his father been so powerful or so straight, never so different and so much the same. Abel was standing motionless as the cart came on. His father saw him and raised a hand and then smiled at him. They had forgiven him. He got up into the cart before it stopped and they turned and left the bad things behind him. The day of pain was over. When they came back to the farm, his mother asked him about Oo, and he smiled and nodded because it was over, and he had lived through it and come back into the season of living things and into their forgiveness again. It was only when his mother set his clothes of that day carefully on the chair again did he realize what his punishment was to be. Tomorrow also. The day after that, he stopped breathing. There was a pushing in his throat. That night he lay staring out at the dark sky, unable to cry himself to sleep. In front of the window, the maple tree moved. He felt angry that he had been in this bed this morning knowing so little. Beside him lay his younger brother sleeping. He began to shake the bed to wake up the little boy who was taking the days so easily. The boy turned and slept on. Once Abel knew he had trusted like that. Once he too had been good. For a while he watched the night and the moon in balance on the slender tips of branches. From that day on, the time,
which before had been a long measure, was now hung for him in endless strings of 5 and 2. His mother began to wait for him with pencil and paper, and sometimes he wrote words there, but only the ones he had learned in school. He did not understand what they meant to be, and he never understood her when she tried to make them important to him. She was eager somehow, and then angry, and finally only sad. It was his fault, for which he was being punished. Soon she got tired and stopped. Janice lay sleeping, her head twisted around as she was when she had been awake watching him. Her hands were loose and quiet on the cotton quilt she had pulled up to warm herself. He shook his head and began to undress. He was eager for the warm bed and no more thinking. All the years he had not thought about the way his father looked sitting up in that wagon on the first day of school. Suddenly he saw his hands drop the stained shirt they were holding and begin to speak to him. School. Yes, it was school they were trying to say to him on that first day. School was the ooh. Only now, years and years away, with words in his hands, was it plain to him. He smiled at himself in the weak light and made the sign for it, shaking his head again. What was the use of it now he no longer needed it, that knowledge? Still, it came back to him again. All the mouths of his years, all the mouths of the city and the shop had meanings and reasons. Too many. Too many to know or to want to know. It was a strange thing, though, wanting to think backwards. It was too strange even to tell Janice that his mind, here in another place, was still holding that cart and the school, holding them waiting. He looked at Janice again and she moved her head away, putting her arm up over her head and then down again. She turned on her side and settled more, and slept. At the deaf school she was held also, waiting. Then she was all alive, always moving, changing, laughing quickly, scowling and laughing again. She was like the light that changes but is always beautiful, always different, always to wonder at. It was different with her now. Now she was pinched in and always tired. She would only eat and finish eating, wipe her mouth and crawl into bed and fall asleep with her clothes on. He looked around the room. The dinner things were there, drying and crusting on the windowsill. He moved around the bed and picked up the coffee bowls. One of them stuck to the sill for a minute. Something on the bottom of it, something that was not washed and dried away. It put a greasy feeling in his mind, a greasy smell in his mind, like mice that died in the seed sacks of the barn. He had found a nest of them once, packed in tight among the sacks in the close, hot corner where the outgrown, unmended things were put by against some unexpected need. The memory was in his body still. His hair rose along his neck and down under the collar of his underwear. He took the bowls to the washstand and poured some cold water over them. For a minute, he thought about washing the pots. But he was beginning to be too angry with Janice, and he put the pots in with the bowls and turned away. It was her job to do that, the wife's job. She was getting away from him and from her jobs every night, going to sleep for the warm, secret dreams where he could not follow. Every night, as soon as she was home and warm with a little food. Tomorrow she would wake up and say she was still not rested, not ready, and she would drag off to work yawning, her face unwashed from the night and blurred with breakfast crumbs. He muttered, making half words one-handed, and without waking her, he got undressed, rinsed his mouth, and spat the rinsings out the window. Then he pissed into the alley, which saved having to go all the way downstairs and out to the privy, losing all the warmth of his dinner. It was bitter cold. He shut the window fast and got into bed. It was good. She was sleeping still. Her turning had left him a warmed place, and he went gratefully into it and took up his own secrets. One special one to warm his own night. It was a little like making a magic toward sleep. The Christmas bonus. The Christmas bonus. 5. Barbara was back at work in the cap room. Her hand was healed, but with a big scar, and her sign was halting and lame with the tightening of its sinews. She and Mary nodded at Janice's tired look. They said a sign she didn't understand, and then they giggled and pulled joking faces.
"What is it you said?"
They made the sign again and then touched each other on the shoulder, laughing.
"What is it?"
"You know, pregnant. Going to have a baby. Are you sick in the morning? Do you throw up?"
"I feel dizzy in the morning and I am always tired."
"What about the blood? Any blood?"
"What blood?"
"Oh, you are dumb. The monthly."
"No, not for a while."
Janice looked away from them because she was blushing. Her eye caught a girl staring at them from the corner near the door. She turned back.
"Someone is watching the deafies," she said. "Eyes are sticking out over a sandwich."
The other two girls looked sideways, seeming not to look.
"She is so interested," Barbara said, "that the filling falls out of the sandwich and the bread is hanging open like her own big mouth."
"A tongue sandwich," Mary said.
"She is very busy," Janice added. "When the buttons come off, she closes her blouse with safety pins."
The sign had become animated, the witness more intent.
"Maybe that's good," Mary said. "Before she learned better, she used to do it with chewing gum. Before the chewing gum, she used nails. Didn't that hurt?"
"Not her. The nails got bent and she had to throw them away. Big improvement. That's from watching us. If she didn't learn from us, she wouldn't know anything."
Then they laughed and nodded to each other again, and the bell rang. Janice felt tired and heavy in the afternoon air of the room. She got up slowly and the other girls watched her. She knew they sometimes made fun of her because now she was no faster than they were, no more sure. She had been proud of that speed, but since Barbara's accident, there wasn't the same hunger in them for speed like hers. They never mentioned more pay or transferring to the piecework section anymore. It was all right for Hearing to cut up their hands. Hearing's hands were nothing more than hands. It was different with Deaf. Janice was afraid that her slowing down would lose her the weekly bonus. What did the monthly bleeding have to do with having a baby? Didn't babies come from a man's thing? When she asked the girls later, they made a dummy sign at her.
"How can you forget when you bled last? Don't you know enough to remember that? Why?"
And they laughed at her again. She wished she had told Abel about them. Many times she wanted to tell him things Mary and Barbara said or places they went. The bonus came so regularly now that she had come to depend on it. It would not stop no matter what Abel knew. The reason that she had now for keeping the deaf girls a secret was that it had been a secret before, made with half-lies and trickings that she gave one after the other. The secret had power now because it was thick. The trickings were gone over and over like the machine going again over its own stitches in the holes it had already made for itself. In the evening, she said,
"Maybe I am going to have a baby."
"How do you know?"
"People say when a girl gets tired all the time, it is because of a baby. Also about the bleeding."
She said that part fast before he could use his mind to catch at any of the words. "The girls in school used to talk about it sometimes, the bleeding."
"Maybe you are sick. Do you think you can be sick?"
"It is mostly about the bleeding."
"What will I do?"
His hands had begun to shout at her. He had started suddenly to be very loud, cutting and throwing hard, short words at her, and she began to back away from him, afraid that speech would stop and he would strike her.
"You have to stop this baby, now! Why did you begin to make it? Why did you begin it now?"
"I didn't know,"
she was beginning to cry.
"Maybe it's not—"
"How can it be now? It will want to eat if it comes and is born. We have nothing to feed it. It will die. It will have to die."
He turned and left the room, slamming the door to shake the walls around her. When he came back, he didn't say anything. Janice wondered who might know about a baby without wanting money to tell her. Days passed, and weeks, just the way they did before. The tired feeling went away and Janice was able to stay awake in the evening after she rinsed the dishes, to play checkers with Abel or mend or make love. When she got a little fatter, she let out the gathers in her skirt and closed the belt with a safety pin. Then two pins. Three. It was some time after that, on an evening when she was undressing in bed, that the horrible thing happened. Her stomach began to move, to poke in and out. She tried to hide the movement whenever it came, to pull in her stomach, and when that didn't work, to turn away so Abel couldn't see it. Soon he did see. She was in a nightdress she made to hide herself, and the stomach suddenly went all the way out on the left side, moving and leaping as if she was hiding a dog in a leather sack. She tried to turn away fast, but it was too late. His face got sick and he ran out of the room, down the stairs and outside to throw up in the cold privy. Abel didn't know why it made him sick. On the farm, he saw many births and slaughterings, sickness, dying. He never felt ashamed then, never threw up. It was a baby in there, really. A live thing. He began to shiver. A cold of dizziness came up inside him and he almost fell. She would never want to kill it. She would never let it die. It would be a growing, needing other. Eating, eating, eating. It would have to be kept warm. It would have to have clothes, a place to sleep. Eating. And money he didn't have. What would the law do then? And Janice will have to stop working. He was breathing too fast, dizzy again. He held hard to the wall of the privy, and the sour smell made him retch again. Need. Mouths. He had the sign of need in his hand, and he felt the forefinger hooking into himself, that need hook into his flesh, pulling. He began in slow beats to kick at the walls of the privy and at the door and at the bottom of the seat, with a hard, patient pounding. Soon, in the back of the house, lights went on, which he saw through the cracked places with his eyes, but not his mind. People came out. He did not see them, but felt them standing outside the privy, waiting to beat him, talking about him surely. They were waiting for him to do something bad enough so they could beat him and call the law and take more from him. It made the sick pain worse in him. Back and back again he went, side, side, front, back, kicking with his feet and banging with both fists, until the forward force drove him back by its own power. The ground beneath him began to sink. It went on and on sinking until Abel, almost falling, understood that it was not the earth sinking, but the privy rising, that the men were all around him and were lifting it up, up over him. He could see the hedges at the side of the house, or their shadows blowing against the dark. The men were like houses or trees. They were not taking him away from the privy, they were moving the privy away from him. In the dark, he thought, they would not know who he was. The men were lifting the privy up and up until there was nothing to beat against, only the cold and all of them, dark and great in their big coats. He was afraid to hit at them, although he wanted to so much that his hands shook. If he hit them, they would drop the sidewall of the privy on him and then